New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
If you're going into YouTube for the money, don't do BookTube.
You go on to YouTube and it's free, right? But it's actually not free. Like, people are paying with their time. Yeah. So they're not paying financially, but they're paying with their time. If you're only looking for, you know, a book club, then just join, you know, Tudor Rambles Patreon. That's going to be way less like effort, man. Much easier. And you're actually going to...
Welcome back, everybody, to another cozy Tudor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
I'm your other host, Richard.
Today, as you can see by the title, we're making a pitch here today. We're book reviewers. We're in the BookTube space, and we're making the claim that for one of you out there, hopefully one person is impacted by this, that you should start a channel like this. The light side of BookTube. And the reason we're having this whole discussion in the first place is because we have a very special guest. Johan, Library of a Viking, BookTuber. How are you doing, Johan?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, I feel like I can talk about BookTube for hours and hours and hours. So I'm really, really excited. And yeah, if we can inspire just one person to potentially join this community, then it would be a success.
Yes. And
yeah, another reason we wanted to do this video is, like us and other people, we've seen the negative videos. We've seen Johan's video of the dark side of BookTube. Yeah. We want to bring a little bit of positivity,
optimism,
some levity. We like to be optimistic.
What we're trying to say is, Johan, you seem a little down. We're just trying to lift your spirits too.
I need it desperately.
But yet that has been a thing. Johan, from your research, you were looking up a bunch of videos for your own video, and you were kind of doing some research into the dark side of BookTube and why BookTubers were quitting. And yeah, you inspired a lot of people in the BookTube space. I think Matt's Fantasy Book Reviews did a video on it. Several others did. You can give us more info on that.
We also kind of did one on...
Did like, we?
We talked about comments and things and responses. Mm. We did talk about it.
Oh, you even got us to do it? So why? How did you start this negative conversation about the BookTube space, and why was it happening?
No, that's a really, really good question. Oh, where do I even start? I mean, I suppose it might be helpful a bit to explain a bit my video idea creation process, because I usually brainstorm a lot. So I will write down, you know, 10, 20, 30 different ideas of like videos I'll potentially do. And one of them came from a whole different niche, which was like the dark side of something. And that just made me think like, oh, is there a dark side to BookTube? So I started like researching for videos on YouTube about, do people have complaints about this community? And then I stumbled across like loads of different videos where people were leaving or had different, you know, critiques or complaints about it. So that just inspired me to make a video. And obviously as a BookTuber, I could, you know, bring my viewpoint to the conversation as well.
People seemed to be quitting because it felt like such a grind, and people were putting a bunch of effort into it, didn't feel a good payoff. The whatever goal they had in mind when making a channel, they didn't achieve that, and they were putting in a bunch of hours because it does take a lot of time. Yes. Would that summarize a bit of what people were getting at, why they quit their channels?
Yeah, I think so. And probably a lot of people have different or maybe wrong ideas on what the channel will become. Yeah. So I think a lot of the content creators we do look up to on BookTube are content creators that probably started, you know, with just turning on their camera, they just talked, and then they just turned off the camera, and then they just grew. And a lot of people see that. I mean, nothing wrong with Mike's book review, right? I love him. But that's kind of how he grew, you know? He just turned on his camera. He's really good personality. He just talks, and then he turns off the camera. And he just did that consistently, and now he's on more than 100K. And you see a guy like him, and you're like, oh, well, I can do what Mike is doing. But then you realize, well, you can't. And when you don't get the results, it's really hard.
Matt does the same too. Matt Fantasy Book Reviews, and yep, Mike. Yep. Does Mike do that as well, where Mike just kind of turns it on and records? I didn't know that.
I mean, he does edit slightly every once in a while. It will have some cuts, But yeah, they're definitely low edited videos.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can always do what they do. You just can't do how they do it. A lot of the little things of their personality, the wisdom that they bring to it, like that's the thing you can't fake. No matter how much editing you do or how little editing you do, that's what matters.
Yeah, I kind of wanted this to be helpful for people looking in for what is your goal? Because we can talk, maybe people will be interested. We could talk money stuff and sponsors when you get to a certain level.
Yep.
But also seeing if that's your goal going into mind of making a BookTube channel, you might feel like you're not achieving your goal, especially anytime soon. So I guess properly going, why for you? And by the way, Library of Vikings channel will be in the description below. I don't even think we mentioned that. We'll be right there. Go subscribe to him. So why you started your BookTube channel? Did you have a goal set in mind? And what's been the joy of this? What's the light side for you of why you've been doing it for so long now?
Well, what a good question. I mean, the reason why I started my BookTube channel was initially I was on Bookstagram. I was on there for a bit more than a year. I really enjoyed it. I learned so much and I got introduced to this community. But after a year, I just felt like Bookstagram became quite stale. I just did the same thing again and again. And at that point, I had consumed BookTube for more than a year. So I just started like thinking, oh, maybe I should also branch into this BookTube sphere. And what has been the light side? I mean, so many. I think just in real life, at least when it comes to fantasy, right? You never really meet people that know who Joe Abercrombie is or Brandon Sanderson is. Like, it's so few people in real life that actually know who these authors are. So I think that just stepping into a community where people are super passionate about this extremely specific thing has just been mind-blowing. I think one of the like amazing things I discovered very early on was how approachable BookTubers are. Like, obviously, like maybe Daniel Green, he probably receives a lot of messages every day. Yeah. But I remember when I was at like 1,000 subscribers and I reached out to, it might have been Mike's Book Review or Philip Chase, you know, at least my channel was small. And I messaged him and they replied to me and it just blew my mind. I'm like, these BookTubers, you know, I've been watching their videos for years and they responded to me. There's so many other things, but I would love to also hear what are some of the light sides of BookTubes from your perspectives.
Rich, you're the best person to answer this because you give off a very stoic vibe, to say the best word, and the worst word's probably depressing. So how about you give a good, what's the light side for you? Because people I think can read you as like, this guy doesn't care about things, but you do care deep down.
I do care.
Yeah.
It
comes out.
For the exact same reason, Johan, it's the, before BookTube, the only way I could talk to someone about the Wheel of Time was Reddit. That was it. Any other book I read, I was constantly trying to get my friends to read it, to talk to somebody about it, and they're all so slow. I couldn't talk to them about books. And now it is, I'm in such a privileged place of every time I read a book, any book, I have people to talk to that have read the book as well. Yeah. That is amazing. The fact that I wanted to read The Lonesome Dove. Been recommended it several times. It's a fairly large book, Western. I kind of did it sort of last minute, couple weeks. I was like, I decided, hey, I'm going to read it next couple weeks. Who wants to read it with me? And on our Patreon, we had several, I think we had 6 people that we all read it together and had a great book club at the end of it. And that was just decide, oh, I'm going to read something and book club discussion after it. And it was such an insightful discussion on this book from perspectives I really didn't expect. I've done that with every single book I've read since our Patreon really started getting started doing really
traction.
Well.
That's
if for me, if you ask me, hey, what's the number one reason to start a BookTube channel? It's that you don't have to read alone and it no longer has to be a very lonely hobby. It's now a very active social hobby.
Yeah. That and Johan, do you agree with that? Have you been able to have just instant people that have read that book? You mentioned Abercrombie and Sanderson, that in real life, nobody knows those people. We're in such an echo chamber where everybody obviously knows Sanderson and Abercrombie. Right?
We have the argument of who's bigger, Joe Abercrombie or Pierce Brown. And I was like, oh, of course, Joe Abercrombie. Everyone knows Joe. He's a household name.
Yeah.
apparently not. Apparently Pierce Brown is more popular. I didn't know that.
So have you had that experience, Johan?
Yeah. It's a very interesting question. I think if you want to start a BookTube channel, it must be because you feel like you have something to say. You have something to add to a wider conversation, right? Because if you're only looking for, you know, a book club, then just join, you know, Tudor Ramble's Patreon. That's going to be way less like effort, man. Much easier. And you're actually going to, yeah, and you're actually going to find people that you can chat books with. So I wouldn't say BookTube is the primary reason why you should. I wouldn't say that you should start a BookTube channel just so you can find a book club. There has to be other elements as well. But I definitely agree with you that it's a really, really brilliant way to find a community.
I guess that's also, this is a nature of most how businesses start, is when you see a gap in the market. So yes. if you're looking at BookTube and you think, hey, why isn't someone doing X? Why can't I find XYZ? Or I think this is not really handled as well, or I think there's a perspective not being shown here. That is a fantastic reason.
It happened for us, yeah.
Big reason why we started was we were looking at BookTube. We both like BookTube and realize basically every BookTuber.
Yeah,
mainly when we started.
Yeah.
It was all single person, you know, talk to the camera about 10-20 minute videos and get their takes, done. And we're like, well, why aren't there discussion videos on books? Like, there's plenty of podcast reaction videos to TV shows, movies. There's tons of movie podcasts where two people talk about a movie. Why isn't there one on books? And so that was our niche to fill. That was the need that we thought we saw in the market. And that's why we started.
Yeah. Did you have that kind of thought going in mind, or you just went, hey, you were inspired off of other BookTubers and said, I love what they're doing. I kind of want to emulate that.
How do I answer this question?
You were inspired by us, even though you started before us. I mean,
I occasionally maybe feel like I don't know. I don't want to generalize here, but when I started my BookTube channel, I came into it with a business kind of viewpoint. Not that I wanted to create a business, but I have a master's degree in business strategy and innovation. And I was just looking at BookTube, very similar to as actually both of you did. And I was just seeing, like, if I ever want to be seen on BookTube, I cannot just make TBR videos, wrap-up videos, because there are literally 1,000 different BookTube channels doing that every single day and you know, every single week. Very similar to you guys. I just really thought, like, is there any way I can do something different so I can actually stand out? And I think that's also worth mentioning. I think 5, maybe 10 years ago, you could start a BookTube channel and do relatively little to actually be seen. But now BookTube is so, so competitive that occasionally there will be outliners, right? I mean, Matt's Fancy Book Reviews has a great personality. He can do it. But I would say for, you know, 99% just doing very generic BookTube videos as a brand new BookTube channel, it's going to be really hard to be seen. So it's just something to keep in mind that if you want to start a BookTube channel, think how you can differentiate yourself in the extremely crowded BookTube community.
But why get big in the first place? What's the advantage? So if you're trying to stand out, why have that as an aim or a goal? Why is that a good thing to get bigger and bigger?
Yeah, well, it might not be. You might just want to have a tiny community. I just think that if you start a BookTube channel, then it is because you're trying to connect with a wider audience, right? I think there might be some channels that genuinely are just, they want 5 views, and that's absolutely fine. More power to you if you are. But if you want to grow, then you have to bring a tiny bit of, strategy or a kind of business mindset to BookTube. And again, I don't mean this in a very you have to be extremely business, don't have any soul. Of course, those are the most important thing. But just think about, like, how can you actually do something a bit different than what everyone else is doing? Because if you want to be seen, then you have to do something different.
Treating it like Sanderson has a great business mind and a creative mind, where he writes a crap ton of books, but his mother was an accountant, and he talks about all the time how it's not just about making the book, then it's getting people to read the book. You don't just write the book so you can read it over and over again to yourself. You obviously want to share that with people. And even if you're going into BookTube and do just have that one viewer or 5 people that you're reaching, one kind of thing that we grasp onto, I think, very early on as well, still something I really value, is just the fact that when we would read a book and put a review out there, it's one, fun to discuss. We just enjoy doing that. But then we have a permanent log of all the stuff we've reviewed and our thoughts we could look back at over time. And it's a permanent thing, I guess, in a way. When somebody has an Instagram account and they post pictures of just, hey, cool, look at, I was on this vacation. We kind of treated our channel in a way like a book log, like anybody would on having a photo album. Just that was cool for us at first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. And I definitely think that BookTube still needs to also have, you know, space for people that genuinely just want to record their thoughts on books and stuff. It's absolutely wonderful. So yeah, just to emphasize again, I'm not saying that you need to be extremely business-minded and, you know, be like Elon Musk to grow on in this community.
Well,
if you want to grow big, then yeah, as you said with Brennan Sanderson, most channels will need to think about both the creative aspect, but also think about like, how does YouTube actually work? Figure out how to write a title and do a thumbnail and stuff like that.
Which I want to get your insight by the end though, because people who are interested in making a channel or just seeing how it works behind the scenes, you're a great person, a resource to go to for that. But Rich, you had a thought there?
I did want to ask though, we're talking about the difference between a smaller versus a larger channel. Mm. As a larger channel than most, you know, there's the Daniel Greens out there, but do we also, what are some of the benefits of being a larger BookTube channel? What are some of the perks? What are the benefits of growing your channel?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose there's many. If you are interested in having a voice in the community, I suppose that then you do reach more people. If you have a bigger channel, you can get like more sponsorships for sure. And yeah, I mean, if you're interested in like getting ARGs, then it's a bit easier if your channel is a bit bigger. Yeah, I suppose those are some of the benefits. And generally, the YouTube algorithm will probably also treat you a bit nicer if your channel is a bit bigger. But you still continuously have to post good content. So it's not like you are just going to be able to continuously forever gain loads of views. But whenever I post, you know, my video automatically gets pushed out to way more people than someone that's just starting on BookTube.
The validation for us is definitely like, hey, internet people pay attention to us. I wake up in the morning, see a comment. Oh, I have meaning in the world. You know, for us, it's more so, wow, do I matter or not? Oh, look, somebody paid attention to me.
Uh-oh, our video underperformed by 15%.
We no longer have that value as human beings. Oh, well, there goes so that.
What are some of the advantages that you've seen starting from our channel of like 400 subs to... Yeah. Like 30,000.
I think that's something to mention. Even when we had 400 subs, we had Andrew Givler, Sigils, came onto our channel. He has 1.1 million subscribers. He's a gaming channel, and he was writing a book. But the book space is that welcoming that people are so passionate about books, it overcomes a lot of the, oh, your channel's small. Mm. Like we go on collabs all the time. It doesn't matter channel size or who you are. Just, hey, more excuses to do the thing that we love to do. So even with being that small, there were advantages. But I think today, to get into that business mindset, it's money's one thing. Okay, money's one motivator for some people, but I don't even think money's as valuable as attention in today's market. Like, you know, it's an attention market. So how many eyeballs do you have on something? And if you have something in a hobby you love, so let's say somebody watching here, books is one of your hobbies, but maybe you're more interested in coding. Maybe that's really your thing, or something triumphs over books as your main love. For us, it's books. So the huge advantage is, since we love books so much, and of course it lets us talk to people we would have never talked to before, authors, booktubers like Library of Viking, but then people who we never imagined we would talk to, then anytime we want, have always been in our head, man, wouldn't it be cool if we could do X? Wouldn't it be cool if we could do this? We now have the resources to do that. So on a not plugging portion, but this is actually very cool, but our merch and being able to have bookmarks we designed with our faces and stuff is something we could have never done been able to get the resources to do that. Having right now, we're developing a Rambler rating website for
Cool.
Yeah, our rating system. We're trying to get that into a website, and we have devs, we have a UX designer on board with that, which the only way we reached out to all of them and knew all of them was we just put up on the channel, hey, would somebody be interested in helping us make this thing for the Ramble rating website? And then that just goes, there's a countless number of those things that have happened where, hey, we're looking for an editor to work with. Hey, we're looking for...
When Dragon Steel is being announced, the reason why we were invited on for a panel is somebody who watched our channel was like saw the went on Dragon Steel's or Ben Sanderson's YouTube channel and commented you should have Tudor Ramble on his panel. He's one of apparently the first comments on that video. They saw it and they looked at our stuff and reached out to us. So it
amazing.
It's attention like that before the money. It's eyeballs and attention. That comes first before, I mean, that's general business and most of all. No one can buy your thing unless
you have people eyeballs.
Know about it.
Yeah.
I so would that, say
that's been a huge thing.
Yeah, because obviously now the question was like, what's the benefit of having a big channel? But I think the entry, there's quite a low barrier to enter the BookTube community. Mm-hmm. You can just buy a cheap tripod, a cheap microphone. I would say if you don't have much money, then at least buy a microphone, a lavalier microphone for $15. That's fine. And then use your phone. That's how I started. I don't know how you guys started, but I know a lot of people started very similar to how I did. And then if you grow, then as you start potentially generating money, you can invest a bit more into your channel. So that's one of the benefits. As you grow, you have a bit more money to play around with and actually do stuff. But yeah, don't let money be a big barrier or reason for, you know, not joining. And I think Matt's Fancy Book Reviews, when he did that response video, that's a really good point. Like, he doesn't even really have fantasy books in the background. He just uses a lot of his wife's books, you know, but no one knows because it's so blurred. So you can do a lot of creative things if you don't have a lot of money. So don't let money be the reason why you don't join BookTube if you're interested in doing it.
How would you prevent from that burning out you often see with people who end up doing it, trying it, and quitting? Do you think they put in too... Would you recommend not putting in so much effort to begin with? Start it very casual and put more time as you see more benefits from it?
If you are genuinely interested in growing on the channel and that's really important for you, again, a lot of BookTubers, that's not important. So I'm not speaking to them, I suppose, here. But if you really want to grow your channel, then you need to invest time into figuring out how YouTube works. Just doing a video because you think it's fun is great, but it might not be interesting to watch, you know? And I think that's one thing I would just say to a lot of, like, I have spent genuinely hundreds of hours watching videos on how YouTube works. So my channel didn't grow just randomly. I have like analyzed so many titles, thumbnails, intros, editing and stuff like that. So if you're really interested in growing, then just like slowly figure out how YouTube works. I think is one of the key elements. But again, that might take out the fun for some. For me, I really enjoy it. I really enjoy learning how YouTube works. So if you find that really stressful, then just don't. Just enjoy making videos. That's also fine.
Two channels, if you're interested in like some of the details on how YouTube works, if people watching, I really think Think Media does a great YouTube channel on analyzing thumbnails, titles, video topics. Specifically, they talk about elements to have in thumbnails of something like, was it the
six C's
or something, like either either be promising conflict,
contrast,
competency. I don't know. There's a bunch of different ideas. But then beyond that, I also think Alex Hormozi, which is more of a finance gym guy, but I think he does great stuff on how does social media actually work? How does getting attention work? Typically talking about what do you promise? How do you promise it? And the important part is you have to pay it off. So a lot of things with YouTube is what is the highest promise you can give the viewer that you actually can deliver on? And so what's the most interesting thing you can say in a thumbnail and title and still give and be honest? Instead of, you know, clickbaiting, saying something ridiculous and not delivering. So there's a bunch of those things. And then say that you just have to get really creative with your titles. What are some evocative words that pull someone in, ask someone questions? Or one of our videos that did really well was, do audiobooks even count? That a specific detail of that is, it seems to be a 50-50 split down the middle of people went, yeah, they don't count, or like they don't count as reading. And then another group of people said, like, no, they totally do count. And instantly people were going, oh, I gotta give my opinion about this too, because that was just provocative statement. So things like that are things you have to learn with YouTube.
Yeah. I mean, I found Mr. Beast to really be a useful like guide when I started BookTube. Watched a lot of his interviews. Like, I know he's in a bit of like a lot of controversy at the moment, but when it comes to YouTube knowledge, he's like, he knows everything. And what I found really helpful is that he just said, you know, try to get to 100 videos. And at that point, if you learn something from every new video you uploaded, then at video 100, your videos might be relatively good. But it's a journey, right? And if someone is listening now and you don't know how to edit, you don't know how to record, all of this might sound incredibly overwhelming. And genuinely, don't overthink it. Just start.
Yeah.
Just quoting Mr. Beast here, he said the first 10 videos you make, they will suck. Most likely they will. It's extremely likely they will. But the only way to get to video 100 where your videos actually might be good is by start uploading. So yeah, I would just say don't overthink it if you want to do a BookTube channel. But if you want to come to a place where like Tutor Ramble or my channel or Daniel Green's channel, where you actually produce quite high quality content, that will take you a while, but you can get there. Just do slow improvements over time.
I guess we avoided this. This is an important thing too, of a simple thing when going into any type of endeavor is why. Why are you doing it? What is your why? Because you're not going to make it to the 100th video if you don't have a strong why in the first place. And the why, if that why for the person is, I want to get X number of subscribers by this time or make this much in revenue or get this, that kind of why, if you have that in the back of your mind, might as well not do it. Might as well quit. It's good to have that as a goal. I'm not bad goal. We have goals. We were like, hey, it would be nice to get here. Might not hit those, might hit it. But if your why is, I want to hit this number, I want to do that, that often leads you to, you don't have the fuel to get there in the first place, because discipline's one thing, but you need to have some sort of motivation to get anywhere in life. Just something that's pulling you forward. So for you, did you have that initial, you said you did Instagram at first, you posted books on Instagram. What was even your why to doing that in the first place? So even before that, was it just you liked books and, hey, I want this. This is my why. What was that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, initially, I just felt like I wanted to connect with someone. So I didn't really think that deeply about like my why. Also, initially my Bookstagram, I never shared my face. Like, I was very, very anonymous, but I just really enjoyed having some kind of interaction where I could post, you know, I read Miss War Now, and then just getting one comment from, you know, a stranger somewhere in the world that said like, I love that book, was all I needed at that point. Yeah, I also think that your why is incredibly important if you want to like persist, because YouTube is a roller coaster. I'm sure you both probably have had like loads of highs and also lows where you just think like, my channel is dying. And then the next month you're like, this is the best month ever. And then the next month again, you're like, oh, my channel is dying again. So you need to have a why to like actually help you to stay focused, because when you go on YouTube, it just goes up and down for at least most creators. I suppose my why now, I think when I started my channel, one of the big things is that I just wanted to add a voice to the community that really focused on that reading is a really legitimate hobby, especially reading fiction. So that was one of my focuses, was on like, I want to actually legitimize fiction.
That's a great why. So your why is this now, but back in the day it was loneliness. Loneliness is a great start for a why.
Yes.
Someone please, anybody just listen to me. So that's a great why. And now I like that a lot, because it is strange. It's a different world. We're not 30, 40 years ago, maybe 50 is more accurate, of people going fantasy, sci-fi. What kind of hubbly goosh is that? But now it's more accepted, but still you'll find people that are going, is that real literature?
We have our legitimate? Own friend for some reason thinks that, which like, friend? It's not worth it reading.
Which friend is that?
John. He doesn't think reading fantasy or sci-fi is like real
Shame on
books.
John.
He only reads history novels. It's like, okay, cool. Like, yes, history novels are great, but come on. The Lord of the Rings.
What about the history of a made-up world?
Yeah. Our world is sometimes too depressing to stay here all the time. I want to leave. Yeah. I like leaving this planet occasionally.
We could do a whole other thing, just how the value of stories and just how we believe the truth that's in fiction and all that. We could gush about that, of course.
Well, I mean, let's just make this a 10-hour podcast. Why not? Let's just go on a tangent. I'm joking.
Johan, I did want to ask you, what is one of the best examples or best experiences you've had with your community of interacting with people? What is something you really remember?
I think, except meeting you guys, it's definitely off there. I genuinely think meeting people in real life are some of the highlights. I've been to quite a lot of like book conferences, and just meeting other booktubers in real life is just so cool. Meeting authors in real life is amazing. And then doesn't happen that often, but occasionally when a viewer comes up to you in real life and says like, I love your videos, you know, you never forget moments like that. But what are some of your favorites? I heard someone actually recognize you at a Red Rising event, right?
Yeah,
that was great. That was
very
so fun.
Similar. We had a handful of young blokes recognize us at a using different words.
Just because he's from the United Kingdom?
Yes, exactly. Some young blokes came up to us at a Red Rising event, which was super cool.
That's so
and then
cool.
We had more recently a book fair or book conference in DC, and we were there, and it was such a odd interaction of we're in line waiting to get something signed, and person comes up to us in line, says like, hey, you guys are from Tudor Ramble. We're like, yeah. And I see the person in front of us turns around and notices, like, they must do YouTube things. Like, interesting. They turn back around. We're chatting with this guy. And then someone else comes up, like, oh, you guys are the ones from Tudor Ramble? And the person in front of us again turns around and has even more of a stare of like, like, one, whoa. Okay, two, something's off here. That's too many.
It was not good. That was not a good day for history, because ever since that day, Rich and I have thought, like, when? We have some sort of importance here. And ever since that day, if you've noticed our videos since then, we are worse people for it.
We
need to be humbled.
We're falling into the overzealous critics.
Yeah.
Our egos are getting a little too big. Mine already started pretty big to begin with.
I thought it was capped out. But that, I guess that's something, jokes aside, with the confidence portion of what just making a video does or talking about books has done, at least for me, is somewhat being better at articulating your opinion or having conversations about something that you care about that isn't off camera. You can joke around and have some fun, but it's being on camera, you're prepping yourself to have more of a thought out, thoughtful and
you're trying
engaging
to have a structured, eloquent conversation instead of just...
You articulated better. See, that's the whole thing that we're trying to get better at is you're actually able to do that. And that's a cool skill just over time that even if somebody out there loves books and you go, yeah, this is great, but then you go chat with somebody about the book you love and you're thinking, man, why can't I explain it properly? Why can't I... Oh, this is my favorite thing, but I'm doing such a bad job at pitching it and I want my friend to read this book. Well, the best way to get really good at that is do it a bunch, even if it's in front of the camera and no people watching. It's just great practice. So,
Johan, do you find yourself better able to talk about books with people in real life because of YouTube?
Yeah. And I just loved also what you just said, Austin, about like just improving a lot of other skills. Cause I've never, weird enough, had a creative outlet ever until I created my Bookstagram and my YouTube channel. Like, I've tried playing different instruments, you know, arts and stuff. None of it has like really stayed with me, but for some reason, YouTube, like I love creating YouTube videos, and I've learned how to, you know, just connect a microphone to a computer. I know how to do video editing now. I also know how to present it better.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What's your perfect night? Is it curling up on the couch for a cozy, peaceful night in? Therapy can feel a bit like that. Your comfort place where you replenish your energy. With BetterHelp, get matched with a therapist based on your needs entirely online. It's convenient and suited to your schedule. Find comfort this season with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In a language that's not my first language. So yeah, it definitely helps you with a lot of other skills that are transferable. Like at work, you do presentations, so you can train, you know, presenting in front of a camera. And yeah, you also get a lot of knowledge. Some people might argue that knowing a lot about fantasy literature isn't that useful, but doing that research is transferable to other areas of life as well. So that's also one of the reasons why, yes, might be worth actually creating a channel. And again, it doesn't have to be BookTube, you know, this also applies to other niches on YouTube.
We joked about it being good for your ego, but it's humbling too, we found. Do you find it also humbling with the comments you get in a good, positive way? Or is it just
negative? Occasionally. Occasionally, yeah. You know, I quite enjoy making like video commentary videos or video essays.
Yeah.
And then occasionally, you know, you just get these comments where they're like, so basically what you're saying is that you're just going to overgeneralize everything, or, you know, you just get some crazy comment. You're just like, yeah, that's basically what I just did for half an hour. Fair enough. will always be some comments that will definitely like bring you back to earth.
We are the kings at stretching a 5-minute conversation into an hour.
There's nothing worse than posting an hour long video than our patrons just going, damn, really running out of ideas, aren't you? And we're like, oh. We like that one.
I'm surprised that you don't have on top of every video of yours like, this is too long. I'm glad it happened. Or sorry it happened. I don't know. It's like
we do have those commenters that come back, and it's just they have a funny, you know, you saved my marriage. Thanks for the kidney transplant. Who'd ramble? Just being overly silly about it, and those are always fun.
We've cultivated a good roasting community.
That's I think the best part about our BookTube journey.
Yeah, no, we like to joke at each other. That just gives everyone in the comments to permission to just try and roast us. And it's a fun time. That's the thing, is you keep the hate going in one direction, and we're the lightning rods. That's why I think our community is so generally positive. All their negativity is toward us and not each other.
That's smart.
Everyone just hates you.
How would you describe your community, Yohan?
Yeah, oh man, that's a good question, because I mean, while I do have a community, I have a patrons, I love my patrons. I definitely think that might be one of the areas that I may like. It's one of the weaker areas of my channel, is that I haven't been as good at cultivating, you know, a proper following. Like I think like you both have, or Daniel Green or Mike's Book Review, for example, Talking Story, Massive Fantasy Book Reviews. A lot of these channels are really great at connecting reviewers on a very personal level.
Are you calling them also cult leaders? And thank you if you are.
Yes, I'm calling you cult leaders. Just checking. I'm calling myself a normal person.
We do tell every patron member that comes into ours to unsubscribe from every BookTuber other than us. We want to keep them isolated, away from everyone.
I mean, I've noticed my subscriber count has dropped a lot. Your patron must be exploding.
But yeah, you noticed that, and is that something that you've been wanting to do more of, or what direction have you gone?
Oh, yeah, it's a good question. Basically, how do I summarize this in like very, very briefly? Basically, this year, I was just thinking, I do want to connect with my viewers on a deeper level. I want to show, like, you know, that I have a bit more of a personality, because a lot of my videos are very much, you know, I present information. I think I'm quite good at summarizing different viewpoints and stuff like that. But when you watch my videos, not all of them, but a lot of them are quite informative. Yeah. Well, they're not, you know, not fun. You don't really get to know me as a person. So I started doing vlogging a bit this year, but I've also basically come to realize that I just don't really enjoy vlogging that much. I do occasionally enjoy it, but I'm not I don't love vlogging. So I do kind of think that I'm probably not going to do a lot of vlogging going forward, just because if I'm not passionate about it, then yeah, what's the point? You know, you
need to be passionate about it. What's your why there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, right. So I suppose that's the big question mark. And you both are definitely role models when it comes to cultivating a community, because I find it really inspiring how you've been able to, yeah, just build a community. Like, people genuinely almost seem to talk to you like, you know, like they see you as their friends. And my patrons, the ones I have, very few of them actually ever cancel. So I think they have quite a close relationship with me. That's but awesome. It's not a huge group of people compared to my subscriber count. So yeah, I don't really know. The community part is maybe a question mark, but I am really glad with where my channel is at, and a lot of viewers do return to my videos. So, but yeah, I would love to hear a bit more about, like, yeah, how do you, like, when you think about community, what do you think about?
Thank you for the compliment. Yeah, yeah, thanks so much. And
we actually kind of want to do the reverse of do know where part of our draw is, like, oh, the fun banter, like, that's kind of what we're here for.
Yep.
We also want to, like, oh, we want to do more informative videos more of the time. We want to seem respectable and not just two goofballs occasionally.
That is a tough balance. That is, yeah. Because we are always going to have fun. Yeah. And then I saw some Reddit comment that said this too, that often it's sometimes can be hard to take when we are being critical or are talking serious about something, to take it as seriously, because these guys.
Yeah.
And so we do that. I mean, I think half of our videos too are, it goes from book review to something to separating the art versus the artist, and then to, oh, well, fourth wing review, to what does it really mean to be a critic? And so we kind of just rug pull, and that we try, because these are conversations we'd have. I wouldn't say we would go chat for it for 2 hours about each of these things, because this is an outlet for Rich and I to talk deeper about each of those things. But similar to you, when we're coming up with an idea, it's okay, what's something we want to do? What's something that would be clickable, that people will be interested in? Do those two align? And then Rich and I, when we're doing that, we've had conversations about how do we improve our book reviews so that, yes, it's fun, but also so that we're not repeating ourselves, so that we're being more informative, so that this feels like you're getting two things. You're both getting a good, fun time, but also you leave it going, wow, I understand more about that book, or wow, I get this. And we've done that just recently with, how long was our chat about trying to improve the book reviews?
Several hours.
And over several days, too. I think we sat down and talked. So we, even just talking about our category system we have when we review a book, we have 6 categories. Then we went to each one going, okay, so that we don't repeat ourselves, what are we exactly talking about here? What should we do? Should we do a... You want to go on that? Yeah.
No, there was specific little elements of, hey, we tend to repeat ourselves over these subjects.
Yeah.
Let's try and focus it when we're talking about this kind of subject. Yeah. Let's outline it this way. And that way we don't talk about the individual scene, because that's when we're going to talk about in plot. We're just trying to move our thoughts around and make sure we ask more pointed questions, give further context on that. But to answer your first question that you actually asked us and not the answer we gave, I think a lot about the community is we have the natural advantage of more time, because our videos are longer. It's more conducive for a parasocial relationship, because people hear us having long form conversations. So the fact that you're, especially now, are two podcasts, let's say someone's listening to us in their car on the way to work, 2 hours out of their week, that's a lot of time to spend listening to us talk. Where they will know us a lot more than we know them. And I think that cultivates a much stronger relationship, especially when they pop into the Patreon. By that time,
they when they're know talking us with us, it's well. Like, oh wait, that, how is this per? Oh, it's, this it's feels a, like a buddy.
It's a little weird sometimes. Of like when talking, yeah. and they go, "Oh yeah, I know that," and I'm like, "This what? Is the second time I've talked to you. How do you know this about me?" And it's weird to think about sometimes. Yeah. It was weird that they knew stories I have not explicitly told them, but of course,
they talked about it, yeah.
YouTube.
And it also doesn't help that I think we don't go detailed personal lives, like super, super detailed, yeah. but enough where there's few things we wouldn't share.
We both now have done the personality.
We've done
quiz,
that too.
So
yeah.
that's like, that's fairly personal.
It is.
As the name implies.
People don't know our social security number, but yeah, if we, I guess, do you have that difference where you go, okay, I'm not getting this personal with the channel. I'm going to keep a line here. But you said you're trying to make it not vlog. Again, that's not your thing, but you're trying to get more, build more of a community. How are you going to balance that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think my big focus probably for next year, hopefully like starting now, is just to think a bit more about when I do videos. Like, am I able to actually inject a bit more of who I am into the videos I'm already doing? Because for a while, I was a bit in the thought process of like if I do vlogs, people will see my personality. But what I kind of discovered is a lot of viewers, obviously not all, but a lot of viewers, they don't come to my channel to, you know, get a, you know, entertainment or really relate to someone. A lot of them come to my channel to like be informed by something. So doing vlogging just didn't really vibe with a lot of my audience, current audience. Obviously, I could have cultivated a new audience that was interested in vlogging. So now I'm just thinking, like, if I just focus on what I think good at, but just try and showcase my personality a bit more with the content I'm already good at, then that's probably will be the most effective way. And it's also a huge benefit that I'm more passionate about the content I'm already doing. So I'm glad I might still do vlogs. I don't know if you saw the vlog where I actually met George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, it's awesome. Congrats on that vlog. Yeah.
I loved making that vlog. Yeah. Like, that was genuinely one of the highlights of my BookTube, you know, career.
Yes.
And that was a vlog. So I'm not going to say I will never vlog, but yeah. I just also think that's important, right? Like, if someone's listening now and they're thinking of doing a BookTube channel, you kind of really have to think about, like, how can you find something that you're good at and you're passionate about, and then do that within your niche at the same time. Because you might think that, doing video essays, you know, that will give me a lot of views. But if you don't enjoy making video essays, then don't do it. You know, it's going to be fake and people are going to see it as what it is, which is fake, you know. So try and find something you're passionate about and good at within a niche.
That's why we have five unreleased vlogs.
Oh, yeah.
We have five that we did, like, start to finish, had the...
Oh yeah,
but it just felt like so weird. We were not into it. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's something to be said though. I think there's generally two types of brands you can kind of develop as an online personality. Either people go to you for the subject matter specifically, where they want to know about something, or they go to you personally, like they.
Yeah.
They're either attached to the subject matter or they're attached to the personality. And often the more transferable thing or the more long-standing relationship is the personality. So if someone connects to the person, now that person can do anything and people will follow, people will be more attached to them rather than, like, there's plenty of interesting tech YouTubers that I watch. Like, there's the MKBHD, which I'm attached to his personality, not just his tech, versus there's a Tesla Alert YouTube channel where I watch most of his videos, which talks about announcements coming up in Tesla and what is Tesla up to in the technical field. I'm not attached to the person. I'm attached to the subject matter. I'll watch all his videos, but there's a difference of MKBHD can do a lot of different things. I think it's probably going to be more successful in the long run. The minute the Tesla guy stops doing Tesla videos,
you're
not watching him anymore.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting thing to think about going into YouTube, of is the brand what you're doing, or is the brand you?
Yeah. No, I would definitely agree with that. I think personality is important. I think another way you can also think about it is, do you provide consistently value to your viewers, right? So like an obvious example would be Michael from Vsauce, making incredibly informative scientific videos. But he does inject a bit of personality into his videos.
A bit.
Most of the videos are, you know, hard, you know, science, physics, whatever. But people come back and back again, not necessarily because he is hilarious, he's a bit funny, but because the value he provides is consistent. So people trust that when I click on a Vsauce video, I will get a lot of value from the video. So there's different ways you can get viewers to come back again. One can be, you know, you have an amazing personality. Another is that you always just, your brand is, when I click on that video, I will learn something and gain a lot of, you know, information or knowledge. So yeah, I think there's different ways to look at it, but definitely it's so much more important to actually cultivate, you know, a brand that is known for something.
Yeah. Now, ideally you do want both of, you provide, you have an informative take where people can look to you as a authority figure on some subject matter, but also they genuinely seem to like your personality and that they'll follow you for other things. So that's kind of 100%. The ideal, I guess. We could all work on one thing or the other.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure everyone watching this video, you probably have creators that, like, no matter what they upload, probably most listening 50 minutes into this video are diehard fans of you at this point. But like for me, Ryan Trahan, I don't know if you know him. He's one of the biggest creators. Genuinely, no matter what he uploads, I'll watch it, because I just know his videos are always bangers. I just love them. And if you can get to that point, that is so hard. But if you can get a lot, like a huge following that will click on your video, no matter what the title or thumbnail, then
His wife is one of the biggest BookTubers, isn't she? She has
Haley Fan.
Yeah, three million.
I think she is the biggest one. 4.4 million.
Yeah.
So,
and she does vlog style, right?
Yeah.
So there you go. Attached to the person, just going, hey, I want to see what they're reading, what they think, and that fun kind of just having, just following the person. But then, who in our space would you define as being more informative? Who in our space would you define as being more personality? Besides us, just here. Name, so Bookborn, would you consider her, which of those, or both?
I think Bookborn and I are relatively closely aligned on like what our audience is. I wouldn't be surprised if I looked at her analytics that there's quite a lot of overlap. The more like laid back, I'll probably mention like the two of you, Mike's book reviews, Matt's fantasy book reviews. They're still like, they definitely provide a lot of value with their opinions and stuff like that.
What would you consider Daniel Green?
You know, obviously there's overlap, right? There's also going to be overlap always. So
that's personally what I would say. Daniel Green does a great job of overlapping his personality, but also with informative videos.
Fantasy news. And
like the fantasy news thing is great. I always love watching those. And he's a very entertaining character, both, you know, now that we could say, like, I think like on screen and off, he's a really entertaining guy.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why he is doing so well, as he does the best of both.
He's got it. Yeah, he's super nice. And like you say, he talks to you when you have very few subscribers too. And you're like, whoa, how is that possible that somebody that big reached out to me and I'm just a small in the book space? That's happened to us with so many people. I think we got in touch with you very early on as well. And we've watched you grow over 2 years, 2.5 years now. Likewise, as I'm sure you've seen other people that are sprouting up, and then we were mentioning somebody off camera that, wow, this channel just went from 500 to 30,000 subscribers. This channel just went from this. It's interesting because we're able to keep a pulse on the space. I feel like there's it's a small enough community that you know the names involved, but also large enough to where I think we're in the fantasy sci-fi space of the book space. So I don't know all the BookTubers, but I think I know a lot of the fantasy sci-fi ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely.
It's always fun when like a romantasy BookTuber reaches, because I don't know romantasy BookTube. Yeah. But it's fun when they reach out sometimes of like, Oh, I get to peek into the other side of BookTube that I don't normally venture into. It's fun, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's, but that's just a that's another positive, I think, of the community is now that we are BookTubers, reaching out to other BookTubers and being able to talk with them is a genuine privilege that I really enjoy doing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is one of the benefits, I think.
Johan, I think for those viewers that stayed so long and have parasocialed their ass off, okay? For those people, I think it's time just to give them this last insight. All right, Johan, we're going to ask you about your personal finances, the money you've made, and the sponsors that you've gotten. But in actuality, people don't talk about it very much.
The number is not going to fit on the screen. It's huge.
Yeah. Big surprise here. If you're going into YouTube for the money, don't do BookTube. That's not the best avenue. That's not going to work well for you.
The important thing to show here is like I know you, Johan, and other BookTubers never want to think anybody's doing this for the money. There's obviously better niches to go into to do that. But at the same time, every dollar we make is $1 more than I ever expected when we started this thing.
Yes.
So we are, from the sponsorships, from the Patreon, from merch that we sell, from all that, at this point, we're doing very well for our size, and so we're grateful for the spot we're at, and not to just josh about, hey, we don't make any money. We make more than we deserve on this channel, especially, so that's big. But at the same time, we would not have gotten to this spot unless money wasn't real to us, because we just said, okay, let's just, we've said the story enough times, but we were not very money oriented when we started this thing, just kind of chucked things at it. Hey, let's do it.
We now have finance meetings occasionally.
Every month I have to know because I'm an accountant now. This is, but Johan, just for those people that are listening in this far and are curious behind the scenes of how sponsorship works or how when you get to a certain size of what happens there, what kind of insight can you give for them?
Yeah. Yeah. I think generally there will always be outliers, but generally most BookTube channels, they grow like slowly over time, especially if you continuously, you know, make good videos and create an audience, then your channel might grow slowly. But maybe just one quick question. How long have you been on BookTube now?
It's March of 2022. So
two and a half years.
Yeah.
And I'm getting close to 3 years, but for both of both To The Ramble and myself, you know, it took more than a year, most likely, before we really started earning any kind of real money, and that means that you have done more than 100 videos, worked hundreds of hours and not seeing any income. So just to reiterate what they both just said, don't do BookTube for the money. You can actually get to a place where you will actually start earning relatively good money, I would say. But it will take you probably at least a year, most likely 2 years, to get to that point. So yeah, just get at a point.
Yep.
Money is, BookTube is not the place to get rich. But when it comes to money, most, similar to other niches, most creators will get money from ad revenue, Patreons, or other kinds of similar platforms, sponsorships, and then merch. So there's four avenues you can actually get money from. And I don't know. I can go into all four, but I don't know if one of those will be a bit more interesting to hear about. What do you guys think?
I think most laymen, people who haven't been into YouTube, will understand YouTube ad revenue, which I do want to put on just a business side of things.
Yeah.
YouTube ad revenue at a certain level, like most of the larger channels, a lot of the business side of things, YouTube ad revenue is never going to be enough, and it's never going to just
get that alone.
Yeah. Don't depend on it. There's plenty of channels I've heard the advice of. They basically see YouTube as a free platform. Like, hey, look at that. It's a platform to get attention.
Yes.
At that point, once you have attention, it's your job to monetize how to do that, either by and all of it is providing someone value in some way. So that's something to think about, is you're not going to make all the money on YouTube ads. But a lot of it comes from...
That's just the icing.
Yeah. Patreon was interested to start, but I think that's generally fairly well known of, hey, once you've been going in BookTube a while enough, and you have enough people, like, try and start a Patreon. Sure. How do you go about getting sponsors for videos? I think that would be the more interesting thing for people to know.
Yeah, definitely. So for me, at least, when I crossed the 10K mark, I started receiving a couple of emails every once in a while from firms. Obviously, some of them might be scam companies. Always be careful which companies you actually start working with. But like Skillshare, you know, is a really well-known company. So if it's like a company that you've seen on other YouTubers' videos, that's generally a good starting point. But yeah, then you just say you're interested and then you try to negotiate a price. I discovered when I crossed the 40K mark, and it would be different from channel to channel, but when I crossed the 40K mark, I started receiving a lot more sponsorships. But I definitely received every once in a while between 10 up to 40K as well, sponsorships. And I just want to say again, similar to what Richard just said about ad revenue, like, I know sponsorships can be annoying to view on a video because it breaks off the pace and stuff like that. But genuinely, like, one sponsor might actually double my income for 1 month. And that's a game changer. At the moment, like, I'm outsourcing basically all my video editing. And if I don't have a sponsor, I probably wouldn't be able to afford that. So yeah, I think most people actually know that now, right? Because sponsorships are so common on YouTube. But generally, they can be a game changer for the quality of the content. Me personally, I actually have like an agency that tries to find me sponsorships now as well. So most agencies, they are invite only. But if you do sign up for one, then they will take, depending on the agency, maybe 20% off the cut. So if they negotiate a deal, I don't know, just say a random number. If you say $500 for a sponsorship, they will take 20% and you get the other 80%. So that's also one way you can do it. But yeah, that's probably more relevant for bigger creators, I suppose.
Yeah. And for people that get to that point where you can get sponsors, what would you say is a good way to state your rate? Because companies will go out to you and say, hey, what's your rate?
Yeah.
How much should we? But it's hard to find information online to
very, very hard
to do so. Yeah, what would you advise for people?
Yeah. And it's still actually something I'm learning because I thought I was charging a good rate until I recently met a BookTuber that's way smaller than me that's charging like 2.5 to 3 times more than I am. I'm like, I've been undercharging now for months. Like,
Johan, we learned what Bookborn made on one advertisement and shocked. We're going, Bookborn, they are screwing you. you deserve way more than the sponsor just gave us. So they, yeah, but that's, yeah, we've seen that because people don't know what rate to say at all. So what ended up happening?
Yeah, the way I went about it when I started receiving sponsorships is I reached out to a bigger content creator. So in my case, I actually reached out to Man Carrying Thing. He wasn't that big at that point, okay?
Now he's got over half a million, like, yeah.
When you were at 10K, what did you charge? And he told me, I don't remember, but he probably said, like, when I was 10K, I charged maybe $300 for 60 seconds or something. That was 3 years ago, so you could probably charge more now, I suppose, at 10K. But yeah. So I suppose it's just helpful to ask other creators, what do you charge? Mm-hmm. One also thing that's worth is you can often just go a bit higher and then they will usually counter. It's quite rare the company will just say, no, I'm not going to talk to you. They'll usually say, well, can you do? And then they'll give you a price and then you can accept or reject it.
If they say just outright no, then it's like, probably too high. Mm-hmm. But also if they just if they immediately say yes,
yeah,
you probably lowballed yourself.
No, then you say, sorry, typo, I meant 1,000, not 100. Whoopsies.
I forgot to add two zeros.
Yeah. Oh, God, I've done that with work way too many. Like, walking into a negotiation, it's like, oh, I want this for my salary. Like, deal. Great. I'm like, oh, darn it.
Yeah. Ooh. They were willing to go in.
Oh, that's not good. But yeah,
I mean, there's recently...
Wait, hold on. Let's not give our editor, Nick, any ideas here, okay? Nick, whatever edit you're going to show on screen, don't you be... Watch out now. We actually just... sorry, Johan, go ahead. I just wanted to give Nick an opportunity to make fun of us.
A company reached out to me, and I was like, I'm going to ask for a bit more now. My channel has grown. So I asked for the highest figure I've ever asked. And they just instantly said, yes, that sounds good. I'm like, should I ask for more?
We did that when we were so small. It's okay. I won't say, can I even, I don't know if I can divulge because of companies you sign stuff.
I'm not sure,
but there was this one company who we weren't enthused, but we were like, we'd send a thing out there.
They're not a scam.
It's not a scam.
We did our due diligence, but also it's not Display where we actually I use their stuff.
Yes.
I like them.
It wasn't a company we'd heard of. They reached out. Yeah. We checked it out. We said, oh, cool, neat. Why not? And so when they did, I kind of said to Rich, you know, if they say no, they say no. It's not high stakes. I'm just going to toss an absurd number. What? You remember this?
Yeah.
And so I just tossed a number, especially for our size. We were less than half the size we are now. And we just tossed out the number and they said yes to it rather quickly. And I kind of said to Rich, what? First off, we were stoked because we're going, this is the biggest sponsorship we've ever had on the channel. But secondly, we're going, well, how can we do future sponsorships like this? That was a unique situation, but still, we were shocked with the amount of money sponsors are willing to give creators based on their campaigns. Because if they're searching and they reach out to you, that's a good sign. Yeah. So if they're reaching out to you, they're more likely to. I found that when reaching out to companies, just cold calling, kind of just reaching out to them yourself, I'll usually just for people who watch until I'll usually give a lower rate and lowballing just to get your foot in the door. Like, hey, can we work with you? And then after you have a work relationship later on, when you show, hey, look how many people we brought to your site, can then charge a higher rate later.
Yes.
That's also just 2 cents on that. But Johan, do you have any other insight for the viewers here of your BookTube channel, the light side of things? This is an optimistic, cozy video today. I think we're all just singing Kumbaya. Do you have a last Kumbaya to sing?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can just say for me personally, BookTube has genuinely been life-changing, not only because I've discovered so many fantastic books and a good community, but also for me, it's just been like a huge thing for me creatively. I learned so much. So, for me, I mean, obviously there are some downsides, which I'm not going to mention because it's called the bright light side of YouTube or BookTube. But I would say at least the pros have hugely outweighed the cons for me personally. So I love BookTube. Generally, it's been life-changing for me. So is that good enough?
I hope to the people listening, this doesn't sound like billionaires who are talking about, you know, the small group of people who did make it and go like, we loved it because it worked for us. You know, I hope it doesn't sound in that way because it is confirmation.
Back in my day.
It's survivorship bias. We've survived making it to the point where we love it that much and have gotten it. There's tons of people who have, like you said, there's the dark side. There's people who didn't and you won't hear them as much because they quit and they're losers. They didn't have the platform to do it. They didn't make it to the. I'm joking. But that's valid to say that, hey, take this with a grain of salt. Hopefully, we got some good advice in here. And Rich, do you want to conclude with anything as well?
Don't be negative Nancys. If you fail, it's on you.
It's your fault.
It's your fault. It's because got to learn better, get better. We're a bunch of idiots and we did it. That means you can too.
That's great advice. All right, everybody.
Can I just share one more thing as well?
Yeah, please.
For me, one advice that just really helped me, Ali Abdaal, he's like the biggest productivity YouTuber. But what he said about YouTube is that a lot of people, they think about like, you go onto YouTube and it's free, right? But it's actually not free. Like, people are paying with their time. So they're not paying financially, but they're paying with their time. So, for me, it was helpful just to know that I'm not entitled to any viewers.
Yes.
I have to make my videos worth watching.
Great piece of advice. Hearing way too many times of a video doesn't do well and the excuse of, the algorithm didn't like it. The algorithm is just people. People didn't like this one. Mm-hmm. That's on you. If a video doesn't do well, you did something wrong. It's not the algorithm. Yeah. It's not the system. You. And the wonderful thing is you can't change the algorithm, but you can change what you do.
There's some freedom in that.
So.
Yep.
Yep.
All righty. Well, I guess we're going to be signing off. Thank you so much, Johan, for coming on. And be sure to go subscribe to Library of a Viking. Link is down below. I'm sure you guys are already there anyway, but maybe a couple of you, you know, find your way over there.
Hey, tell Johan he has a great personality. He's not just informative, okay? He's a great guy.
I'm going to be watching.
Yeah.
I'm going to be watching the next video Johan puts on his channel. I'm going to be seeing those nice personality Johan comments. Sometimes I ask, like, hey, comment down below. No. Don't comment down below on our channel. Comment down below on the next Library of Viking channel. Nice personality, Johan. I'm going to be checking it out.
And he got a new haircut. The new haircut, yes. We didn't even mention that. The elephant in the room. No. Just, nice fade.
Got it 3 hours ago. It's definitely fresh.
You knew to show up nice and proper.
All right. Have to.
Johan, thanks so much.
Right. Thank you so
Bye,
much.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, all.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.